listening to ESL Talk, a podcast made for English teachers by English teachers.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hello everyone, welcome to another new episode of ESL Talk. In this episode today, we're going to be looking at the topic of bolstering student vocabulary through teacher talk. We have two amazing expert guests, Kristen and Carmen, who are going to share their knowledge and what they have learned and written about in a recent book on this topic of building and bolstering student vocabulary through teacher talk. Now, when we hear this phrase teacher talk, we might think of just, you know, talking as teachers. There's a little bit more to it than that. So we'll talk about vocabulary, about acquisition, the challenges that students face when acquiring academic language, accessibility, some misconceptions, and also how you can find out more about this topic and hopefully build it into your own teaching practices. So we'll have that interview in just a few minutes. But before we do, we've just got the regular housekeeping to go through this week. First of all, if you're not subscribed to us, please do hit that subscribe button on iTunes and also on Spotify. That way you can get all our new episodes as they drop every single Wednesday. The subscriber count is growing, so it's good to see. So thank you for subscribing and for supporting us. Also, if you're not already following us on Instagram, please do so at ESL Talk Podcast. And we're almost ready to wrap up this season. We've got a couple more episodes to go. But if you would like to be a guest on an upcoming episode, just go to our website, esl-talk.com. You can click the button, be a guest, fill in a couple of details, and you can come to the podcast to share your project or your expertise or what it is you're doing in the world of ESL, which our listeners would love to learn all about. And just finally, don't forget our sponsor, ESL-curriculum.com. That's Crystal Clear ESL, where you can get access to 600 plus interactive, ready-to-go lessons and lesson plans. These include homework. These include high-quality images, sounds, listenings, and videos in there too. There's really, you know, a really amazing offering there across all levels. If you teach kids, if you teach adults, if you teach business English, speaking, writing, IELTS, we have you covered with a 2-week free trial. Just go to esl-curriculum.com to get started with your free 2-week trial. You can also click the description as well. There is a link for you to get started with your trial there too as well. All right, I am excited to get into this interview with Kristen and Carmen talking all about how to bolster teacher talk. So why don't we get into it? Here we go.
Thank you. Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
All right. Hello, Common, Kristen, welcome to ESL Talk. Great to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
No problem at all. So we're here today to talk about bolstering student vocabulary through Teacher Talk. So first of all, for our listeners, could you maybe tell us a little bit about what Teacher Talk is and how it could be used to help improve students' vocabulary? All right, great. So could you tell us a little bit about what Teacher Talk is and how we can use it to improve students' vocabulary?
Sure. So Carmen and I wrote a book published by Routledge in late 2022, entitled Bolstering Vocabulary with Teacher Talk in the Classroom. So Teacher Talk is a tool for teachers to help bolster their students' vocabulary. And our belief is when teachers expose their students to extensive vocabularies, they begin to build their students' receptive and productive language. And it is important to note, I'm an educator. I teach third through fifth grade English language development. And we feel it's important to stress this is not one more thing on teachers' plates. Mm-hmm. This is a mind shift. And so it is about making a conscious effort of weighing every word and every interaction with your students and capitalizing on each moment when we converse with our students.
That's a really nice way of kind of encapsulating what it is and what it means, because I feel teachers just think, oh, it's when I speak to students. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. It's not just essentially teachers talking. So that's really important when we're thinking about this idea of how we acquire language and how we use language and how we communicate with our learners. So why is academic language acquisition important for students, especially when it comes to maybe their college and career readiness?
Mm-hmm. Well, we feel like that is such an important question, because as Kristen just stated, using the elevated teacher talk isn't something that you write into a lesson plan. And so you really have to have a firm grip on your why, your rationale for using it, or teachers won't use it. And so we know that in, you know, the world of academics, we encounter that more formal register than when we interact socially with our family and friends. And this is especially true with the language of textbooks. We know that educational manuals and literature is written in a more formal register. And so if we deny students the opportunity to hear that from our own teacher talk, we really deny them an opportunity to access that language in developing a robust vocabulary that will prepare them for whatever career they choose. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Kristen and I ran across some research done by Noni Lasso. She's from the Harvard School of Education. And they did research with middle school students and found that in classrooms where teachers used a lot of academic vocabulary, that an elevated language, that the students' reading scores were higher. And so we know that it just has a good impact on students' academic achievement overall. Dr. Lasso referred to teacher talk as an uncultivated, unattended to lever for change. And we're excited that in our book, we are addressing 2/3 of the book just addresses strategies for building teachers' elevated language.
Fantastic. That's a really in-depth and a really nice way to kind of break it down and how we can apply this and how it can be useful for learners too. So there's 2 things I found in my research, which were social language and academic language. So how, obviously those are 2 different things, but how can we break down those differences, and maybe how can we understand those differences for our learners?
So social language is the language that we use in social situations, such as informal conversations and, of course, on social media. So students often acquire this language quickly for so many reasons. They want to communicate with their peers. They want to interact with social media. And so they learn that quickly. And oftentimes they're with their peers a good portion of the day, especially during the school day and also outside the school day. Now, academic language, on the other hand, is the language that we hear primarily in academic settings. Mm-hmm. So we often only hear it or use it when we're in these types of settings. So think about the amount of time that we use academic language throughout our day. It isn't nearly as much as we use social language. However, when we're in the academic setting and we're responding in written form or even in verbal form, that is the form that is expected of our students.
Right. So it's about kind of setting expectations and making clear the environment and what is expected within that environment. Have I got that correct?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So if we're, as teachers, if we are using that more formal register when in all interactions, then students have multiple opportunities to hear and interact with that language.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. So what would you say are some challenges that students might face when they're trying to acquire academic language, especially at a younger age? You know, you mentioned you teach kind of elementary age. So how would that differ maybe between elementary school, middle school, and maybe even high school?
Okay, that's a great question. To springboard off of some of Kristen's comments.
Yes, please.
We know that the academic language is mostly heard and spoken and written and read in an academic setting. Mm-hmm. And so that creates a problem because most students will not acquire that type of language in social settings, so that the only opportunity for students to really develop that high academic register is in the school setting. And when students come to school, here in the States, most students start school maybe at preschool or at around age 5, they'll begin kindergarten. And almost immediately, we begin a literacy campaign to teach them to read and write, and rightly so. But there is sometimes this comes at a cost, because when the focus is on that reading and writing, sometimes it can happen at the expense of that oral language development. And it's interesting, Stricton James in 1984, they analyzed the gap between listening and reading comprehension. And what they found was very, very fascinating. They found that listening comprehension outpaced reading comprehension all the way through age 14. So if you think about that, that they found that there were actually greater amounts of comprehension when students were able to hear the content through what they heard delivered from the teacher or through social interaction with their peers, as opposed to what they just read about or wrote about. And so this is has a great impact on what we're talking about in the book, because we know that most people, according to this research, most students are going to acquire a lot more comprehension, including vocabulary, through what they hear. And so we're trying to capitalize on that oral input that we do have control over as teachers.
I see. That's, again, I like the way you've approached this and kind of broken it down and referred to research as well, which is great. And I've made a note of this as well, which we can come back to. So how can teachers tailor their language use specifically with the words that they use? And what are some strategies? I know you've mentioned, you've alluded to the book where there's a lot of strategies. What are some of the most effective or the most, you know, salient strategies that teachers could use to support this academic language development?
So I'll answer the first part of the question, how can teachers tailor their use of language? And I'll use that some of the examples. So let's think of all the common words and phrases you heard as a student in throughout your academic career, and then think of all the words teachers are using and phrases as they conduct their day. So what if we took some of those common phrases that students hear, you know, primary through intermediate through secondary, what if we took some of those common words and phrases and replaced them with some more tier two, tier three vocabulary, so more academic terms? So for example, what if we were to say, a common word and phrase you might hear in a primary classroom is come to the carpet, you know, meaning the teacher wants to have the students come and sit in front of the room. Right. What if we would just tweak that to let's congregate on the carpet? So I've just introduced the word congregate. I've replaced the word come with the word congregate. Now, what if I even took it a step further? And I would use gestures so the students would know that congregate means to come. What if I took it a step further? I teach math to multilingual learners. What if I were to put a math term in that phrase or sentence? What if I would say, come to the rectangular carpet? So now I've introduced geometry, which is it's common. It's in kindergarten. Now I've exposed the students to the word rectangular, which they will hear when the teacher is teaching math, but now they're also going to hear it in a different context at a different time of day. We feel that the more exposure the students get to this type of vocabulary and this type of language structure, the more likely they're going to acquire those tier two and tier three words.
Makes a lot of sense. And I like the examples that you used as well. And the fact that kindergartners can learn those kinds of words and connect them to actions or different, you know, kind of sentences that they already know is a really cool way to think about it. So thank you for sharing that example. And then the second part of my question was thinking about the strategies. So maybe Colin, you could share a little bit on that one.
Yes. Well, one of the strategies that we include in our book is capitalizing on the concept of word families, and word families meaning those groups of words that have common roots. And so if you think about how these might typically be introduced, in my experience, they are typically have been introduced once students can already read. And then we might see an anchor chart with roots and prefixes and suffixes. The strategy that we introduce in our book is having the teacher model root words that that use many different prefixes and suffixes. And a good way to explain this is, again, by giving you an example. So mm-hmm. if I will take the example that Kristen used with let's congregate on the carpet. So I might be calling my students to the carpet. And let's say that I have used that word now, introduced the word congregate. And I would say, let's congregate on the carpet. And then as students begin moving to the carpet, in that moment, I could say, oh, I see you are congregating. Mm-hmm. And then as students are all sitting on the carpet, I might say, look at us. We congregated very quietly today, but I see, or I notice that one congregant hasn't made her way over to the carpet yet. As I point to the student, maybe that is taking his or her time to get to the carpet. And then I'll look at students and say, look at us. We made a congregation, as I gesture with my hands, all of us sitting together. We made a congregation. And then I might even add, we will recongregate later this afternoon. And so with one exposure, students, we wouldn't expect them to understand all of that vocabulary, but with repeated exposure and in different situations using different root words, our students can very quickly come to know and understand those prefixes and suffixes.
Yes, I love the application, the way you've kind of taken all the different word forms and you've used them in a flexible way in context. So like you said, even if they don't necessarily understand all of the different types of the word use, they can at least be familiar with it and at least know some of them and hopefully replicate them in the future. This is really great stuff. So how can teachers make sure language use is accessible and inclusive? This is a really key thing that I work with a lot of teachers about inclusivity and accessibility. So how can teachers make sure they use the right words to cater to this?
So when working with students who are just learning English or just learning a new language, we talk about comprehensible input, Stephen Krashen's term, that the level of language should be slightly above the student's listening comprehension.
Right.
So therefore, we are not going to talk on a high level with our students who are just arriving to the country. We are going to gradually introduce them to more comprehensible input. So if we use too many words in the beginning, and we're talking too much, and this goes for anyone working with multilingual learners, you're going to lose them. So what we suggest is that you start with maybe a word or a phrase once you have established that the students understand that word or that concept. And then, like Carmen said, you're using the gestures. You're using the pictures, you're using different modes of helping scaffolding to help the students understand the language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really clear. And you know, the more we can offer context and examples and put them into the right situations, then I think that hopefully means that everyone has access to it and are able to you know, what's the word that I'm looking for? They can use the words and they can manipulate the words in different ways, which is really important for building that knowledge. So what are some misconceptions about teacher talk? We already mentioned one right at the start, but what are some misconceptions that you've heard of or that you came across in your writing of the book and your research? And what about its effectiveness for vocabulary development?
So Verplaats coined the term the benevolent conspiracy. And this is to warn educators to be on their guard about lowering expectations with higher level questioning for multilingual learners. We feel the exact same way with teachers continuously using simple vocabulary and sentence structures when they're speaking with their students. So once it's been established that the students are able to understand, comprehend, and have access to the language, like you mentioned before, we feel that it is extremely important for us to start using the more elevated, the tier one, the tier two, the tier three vocabulary words and the complex structure in order for them to have exposure to these words before they are asked to tackle it by listening to a lecture or reading it in a complex text. And if I can just add to that I think sometimes we as educators, we feel the need to connect with the students. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we feel the need, that connection needs to be using terms on their level and using slang. And while we do feel that there is a place for all different dialects and slang and parts of different parts of speech, we also feel that it is extremely important for the students to be exposed to these words in order for them to be successful in an academic setting.
Yeah. How can they ever be expected to use the vocabulary if they're not exposed to it in different ways? That makes a lot of sense for sure. So how can teacher talk be used in conjunction with other strategies to support academic language development?
Many of the strategies that we introduce are also used in conjunction with other good techniques that would be used with English learners, such as total physical response or gestures and using visuals to help give students that comprehensible input. One of the examples that I have used that's included in the book that I've used with first grade students all the way up to high school students is the teaching of contrasting vocabulary, which is something that we do when we're comparing, contrasting. And typically the first word that students use is that word, but. And so what I'll do as we're giving, comparing something, contrasting something, is that I will use the hand gesture of a U-turn. And so an example of this might be, Asian elephants have small ears, but African elephants have large ears. And as soon as I say that word, but, that's when I use the hand gesture of this U-turn. And so once students comprehend that word, but, and they know that it's used to present a contrasting idea, I then introduce other signal words that have the same meaning. So I might use words such as on the contrary, on the other hand, or whereas. And so then the new example would become Asian elephants have small ears, whereas African elephants have large ears. And so in that way, students are exposed to this rich, elevated language and a variety of forms, words that have the same meaning as but. And the beautiful thing about using that gesture, the hand gesture, is it serves as a trigger for students. So as soon as they see that U-turn hand gesture, they know, oh, I know what my teacher is doing. She uses that with but. She's telling me how these two ideas or these two objects are different. Yeah. And so I don't have to reteach the meaning. Now it just becomes a matter of using substitutionary language, other words, and we can post these in the room. And then as the teacher uses them, models them in his or her speech, our students are gaining this rich exposure. And I've seen it time and time again with the youngest of students all the way up through high school, where they try the language on. If a teacher is diligent in modeling it, that students will readily try it on themselves and use it in their speaking and writing as well.
Wonderful example. I did something similar with apples and oranges, and I literally used apples and oranges. And I said, is it the same or is it similar? And we talked about that as well. So I like the physical part of it, literally doing the U-turn with your hand to signal, contrast. And the links to TPR as well, which is a field that I've done quite a bit of research in as well. So I know exactly what you're saying with this. Okay, so this is great. And, for most students, they should be able to follow and learn from this. But how would we monitor or how would we check the progress of students' academic language when they're acquiring it? What ways, what methods could we use to monitor this progress?
So a great way, this is actually formative assessment on the spot. So if we are using elevated language in our directions, we can very quickly tell if a student is comprehending the direction or if they're not comprehending the direction. Mm-hmm. And so it's an easy way for the teacher, for example, if the teacher says, discard your food in the receptacle, if they are able to stand up and throw their food in the trash can, you know right there and then that they understood those tier two words, discard and receptacle. Now, if they don't, you may have to say, discard your food in the trash can,
mm-hmm.
and work backwards. But we have discovered that even with our L's who are, you know, new to the country, if you're using those gestures and it's in a context, they are still able to understand those commands.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Always work backwards if you need to, and you can simplify it as much as you can. And again, it ties into what you said earlier about always working a little bit above their current language level to help support them and build up their skills. So how could we support students who might be struggling and they're just not getting it? And we have what I call the bobblehead syndrome, where they all just put their heads and you say, okay, begin, and you just look around, or you ask them an open question and they give you a closed response. So how can we help support those students, perhaps, who might struggle?
Mm-hmm. Great, great question. Because we know they do. Our students, especially those at the more beginning levels of language learning, struggle with the academic language. And I would say that repetition and routines are so important. And so what we're talking about, this modeling of academic language and also modeling of elevated language in general, really is more than just a one-time, hit of a certain academic vocabulary word, but it's ongoing and should be pervasive to help students bolster their language. And we know that students just need lots and lots of repetition. So students, our teachers are seizing every opportunity to repeat those academic words over and over again for students. I recently just provided some professional development for some middle school teachers, and we did a little lesson in Arabic with the aid of one of our Arabic speaking students. And it was on covalent bonding. It was a topic that was being taught in middle school. And they were so overwhelmed at just the few words we had chosen for them to learn. Mm-hmm. And we were able to illustrate the point of when you don't know the language, that repetition is just absolutely vital, because you need to hear what the word sounds like and you need visuals. Also, routines are so important. One of the routines that we introduce in the book is just providing that visual post-it note for students right in the moment, based on student need. So this could be, for example, Kristen gives the example in the book of a student that was writing about sleep. Mm-hmm. And so she was able to introduce this concept of the nuanced words for sleep. And we also talk about opposites on a continuum, where you give two words and then introduce students to the nuanced vocabulary. So we might talk about the types of sleep that are more that deep or long sleep, as opposed to a light sleep. So mm-hmm. light sleep being a doze or a rest or a snooze. And longer sleep being a slumber or to hibernate. And in that way, we help students develop this robust language, but it only happens through repetition. And we can certainly do that as teachers, as we continually put that vocabulary in front of students and use routines on a regular basis, because then we don't have to reteach the routines, and students will know when the teacher starts to draw a line on the board with two words. Oh, I know where she's going. These words are polar opposites. And now she's going to fill in the nuanced language for us. So I don't have to reteach that routine. So repetition and routines are vital.
Repetition, repetition, repetition. Yeah, exactly. I like that. And I always make a game of that with students, and I'll say repetition, and they'll say what? We play that game sometimes to help them, but it definitely helps them learn. And I like the way of drawing the line and kind of putting a scale on there. And you know, we can manipulate that. We can get students to fill it in if they have the confidence, the knowledge. We can even extend the line sometimes as well if we're able to. So there's a lot of things you can do with that. And these are great techniques that you're sharing, and kind of really excited to find out more about the book. So why could our listeners find your book? Why can they purchase the book? What's the information about the book?
So we published the book. Carmen, do you want to hold it up again for our listeners? Bolstering Vocabulary with Teacher Talk in the Classroom. It is on Rutledge's website, as well as Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And if you even Google the title, it is on a myriad of sites. We also had the opportunity recently to have a book signing at our Barnes & Noble. So they do carry that.
Incredible. I will drop all the links below the episode description. So if any of our listeners are interested, they can definitely check that out. It sounds like you've got lots of amazing, useful advice in there and practical tips for teachers. So we'll definitely push that out for our listeners to check out as well. And how could our listeners get in touch with you if they have any more questions about what we've discussed today?
Bolstering Teacher Talk at gmail.com is a great way you can use that, and we will both reach out.
Amazing. That is wonderful. I really appreciate your time. Thank you both for joining me today. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Daniel.
All right. So there we have it. Another great interview with our guests, Kristen and Carmen. Do follow the links in the description below so that you can have a look at their book, get yourself a copy, and find out more about what they do as well. So I've added all the social links and the ways to get in touch with them below. I really enjoyed this episode, and I learned a lot about Teacher Talk as well. And there were some really great strategies and some simple ways we can implement our teaching to bring in these strategies and to enhance student vocabulary in lots of different ways. So hopefully you're able to take away quite a bit from that. I know I was. Again, if you would like to join us for an upcoming episode, you can do so. Just go to the website esl-talk.com, click the Be a Guest button, tell us a little bit about the project or what it is you'd like to speak about, and we can arrange an interview for you. Again, if you have any questions, we do get them quite regularly. We're always happy to answer them for you. You can email us esltalkpodcast@gmail.com. You can also do so on Instagram. You can go to esltalkpodcast, click message, and send us a message through as well. We always appreciate the feedback and the kind comments. We continue to grow, and we're doing fantastically well. So we're really grateful for that support. We're almost at the end of our season. We've got a couple more episodes to go. So please, please do feel free to join us again next week for another new episode, and we will see you very soon. Thanks for joining. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe for even more ESL teaching content.